Welcome back to Sojourner Truth, and ain't none of us backing down. This is your host, Margaret Prescott, and we are now going to be turning our attention to the conference going on now in Cochabamba, the World People's Climate Summit. And joining us from Cochabamba, we have Jason Negron Gonzalez. Jason, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. Jason is the former director of Movement Generation, co-founder of the Movement Generation Justice and Ecology Project, and current program associate at Movement Generation. He began his political work organizing as a student around Puerto Rican community issues. As a student at UC Berkeley, he was involved in building multiracial student alliances and worked against the ending of affirmative action and cutting back of ethnic studies. After graduating, he worked for 7 years with the People Organized to Win Employment Rights, or POWER, a membership-based community labor organization in San Francisco. In his time at POWER, Jason served as organizer, campaign director, and education director, and led alliance building work locally and nationally. And Jason, for his night job, is also a trauma RN at San Francisco General Hospital. And now here you are in Bolivia for this conference, and today being Earth Day, a lot of focus on the environment today. And Jason, tell us what is happening where you are now in Cochabamba, Bolivia, at the conference. What's the latest there?
It is kind of fitting that today is Earth Day, because it's the culmination of the conference. Today is the final day, and you know, over the last 3 or 4 days, there's been a lot of work, people up till 2 in the morning, learning a lot from each other, but also working in 18 different working groups to try to come to some kind of a proposal about how social movements and NGOs and progressive governments think we should be moving into the future of trying to solve the climate crisis.
And you think you're going to be successful, yeah, in coming up with that type of working document?
I'm sorry?
Are you going to be successful, you think, in coming up with that working document, which has been the goal of the conference?
Absolutely. So the working groups have all finished and come to consensus. That's being kind of packaged into one unified document, and then it's going to be released back in this afternoon at a big rally, an address for everyone. So it is going to be successful, and I think it's going to be necessary, because in a lot of ways, coming out of this conference is only happening because of the direction that developed countries took these negotiations and the attempt to solve the climate crisis in Copenhagen. But I think it's also true that it's complicated. So I think, you know, even here in Cochabamba, there's been a lot of principled struggle between different organizations and social movements and governments to try to figure out what's the right path to try to deal with some of this stuff.
Can you give us some idea? I know you can't go into any depth, but can you give us some idea of what some of those struggles have been? I mean, has there been a common thread running among them, or what?
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm not sure if the listeners are familiar, but coming out of Copenhagen, what the United States ended up doing was kind of having a series of backroom meetings and then producing something they ended up naming the Copenhagen Accord.
Yeah.
And the Copenhagen Accord represents a step backwards from Kyoto. When Kyoto had a lot of its own problems, but the Copenhagen Accord is basically the proposal that the U.S. has been trying to move forward to basically have each country kind of come up on their own with the number of emissions reductions they want to commit to, and then everyone kind of throws it in the pot, and then you sort of see what the answer is.
Yeah.
And it all kind of plays out through a carbon market, which basically means that for the countries that pollute the most, like the United States, and have the highest level of emissions, they don't really have to reduce. They just kind of have to pay someone else to reduce for them, which of course, is a pretty dubious thing. It doesn't necessarily, the devil's in the details of whether or not that works out. So here, I think there's, you know, some of the debates have been, you know, should a carbon market even be possible, or should the countries that pollute the most just reduce their emissions in their own countries? Additionally, you know, there's other mechanisms that were set up through some of these carbon markets in the past that kind of spurred deforestation, that spurred hydroelectric dam construction, a lot of other things that actually were environmentally destructive and contributed to the climate crisis and were negatively impacting peasant farmers, indigenous communities, low-income people around the world. So the question now is, you know, do we reject all of that outright and say that we need to move in a better direction, or how much do we play within the framework of what the politics of the day, which unfortunately aren't where they should be.
So are some of these conflicts now being played out as you're trying to come up with the document, or is there, which direction do you think it's going in?
I mean, it's going to be somewhere in the middle, I think, you know, which is sort of reflective of the moment, you know.
Okay.
The United States is putting a lot of pressure. The United States announced right the week before this conference that it was going to withhold any climate funding to Bolivia and to Ecuador for, you know, refusing to sign on to the Copenhagen Accord. So things have gotten a little bit nasty and bullish in the climate negotiations. So I think because of that, you know, there is this question of, you know, what's the right next step and what's realistic and what's possible in this moment. But at the same time, I think the real beauty of this gathering has been that indigenous communities and social movements have been at the center, which means that, you know, the real impact that all of this has on those communities has a central place in the negotiations. Is going to be fundamental in terms of whatever comes out. So there's definitely been debate, you know, between those who kind of want to play more within the realistic politics of the day and those who say, look, you know, Copenhagen Accord or even Kyoto may have so many flaws that they're not actually going to be helpful. But, you know, that it's moving in a good direction, I think.
Right, and I hear you about the threat from the United States of basically withholding funding. But what has the response been? I mean, I know that there have been some heads of states from some of the left-leaning countries who were supposed to attend the conference in any case. And I wondered if you have heard any of the remarks. Do you know if President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela, for example, turned up? He was quite fiery. In Copenhagen.
So he did turn up, and he's here right now. And right as we're speaking, they're having a reporting out from the working groups with some of these government representatives and heads of state to kind of further process this stuff. So he's here. But one thing that I think it was important to say in terms of the question that you're raising is that, you know, there's kind of two big pieces that I think everyone would agree on. Number one, regardless of the content, whatever process is used to kind of to come up with a global solution to this problem needs to be open and democratic and allow the participation of certainly all countries, but also all peoples, indigenous communities, all social sectors. So the reality is for the U.S. to kind of engage in a backroom deal that then it sort of basically excludes all of those people from the process. It's completely unacceptable now and in the future.
Right. Now, we just have a couple of minutes, and you have come out, I mean, in terms of your work at UC Berkeley and with Power in San Francisco community labor organizing base, now organizing with the Movement Generation Justice and Ecology Project. And I wanted to get your take in terms of the movement building efforts, you know, happening there, but also the integration and interrelationship of issues of poverty, for example, and concern about resources for people and resources for the environment, because so much of the face of the environmental movement has been seen to be a kind of a middle class, you know, white middle class thing. Although you find primarily the global South and people of color and even inner city communities here in the United States are the ones really feeling most of the brunt of the lack of environmental justice, although clearly everybody on the planet is impacted. I know that's a tall order. If you could just address that quickly, please.
No. Thank you for the question. So I think for folks that should have a sense that here, the folks who are convened here, it's anything but white and middle class. So the predominant groups that are here are, you know, mass social movements of peasant farmers, of indigenous people. So I think it's clear when you look at the global South, the questions of the environment and social and economic questions of social justice are intimately linked. There's no separation at all. You know, whether it's about access to water, access to food, access to work, community development, you know, people are directly in relationship to the environment, and as there are, you know, a further degradation of the environment and further attacks on people's access to the land, to the earth, to the resources and the water, you know, it directly impacts them. For those of us in the United States, I think the perspective could be that we're a little bit more removed, but I think, number one, the reality is the same in terms of our dependence on the environment, even when we're living in the city. And number two, I think for us in the movement that's trying to address this question of the climate, I think we do have to directly and intimately link all of these questions to all of the issues of jobs, work, housing, immigration, all the other burning issues that are happening in the United States right now, because they are intimately linked. And I think the reality is, to address the issue of climate change, we need a pretty massive economic and community transition in the United States. And
right.
I think that kind of, and I think that transition has the capacity to actually create jobs, to improve conditions in the community, and make lives better. But I think often the way it's sold to us is that this transition is actually represents a hardship for people that takes us in a direction where we have less. We kind of have to tighten the belt. And I think there is a question about how we consume in an appropriate way. But I think that those of us who are struggling in the U.S. to try to address these issues and to get the U.S. government to take a less obstructionist position, I think we need to think seriously about, look, this is a transition that we want to make, I would say, both for our children, but even for our immediate, medium to short-term interests economically and socially. I think we want to move towards a type of economy, you know, that prioritizes people and not profit, that allows us to have jobs that are in the community, that are local, that meet the needs of the health of the community, you know, that aren't sort of spurring the profit of a few people at the expense of the many. So, yeah, I think it's a really important point.
Right. Well, Jason Negron Gonzalez, we are going to have to leave it there. Joining us from Cochabamba, Bolivia, and we hope tomorrow morning to be able to get a report. It's our regular Friday roundtable, but we want to spend a few minutes getting a report on the outcome of that conference that would have been finished by then. And I also want to thank our partners for producing this segment, this series, the Global Justice Ecology Project. So thanks to that team and also Jason Negron Gonzalez. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Have a good day, everybody. Happy Earth Day.
Okay, and happy Earth Day to you as well.